Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 9th of April, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here. Happy Friday to everyone. You all know this is my favorite day.
Even though you have to do a podcast. I'm kidding. So as everyone knows, it is in fact Friday. I have Andrew on the show because it is Security Friday. And I guess we'll just get to it. So first, we have an interesting new Safari exploit that's been discovered.
Yes. Yeah, so I think I was on Talk About Security. What was it? Tuesday? Surprise. We have more things to talk about.
Yeah. Well, we kind of dedicated Tuesday to like one specific topic. So,
Yeah.
So we did find a little bit of extra stuff to chat about. Here you go.
Yeah. So these topics today seem to me to be good topics. Like this is good stuff happening in security. And the first topic is the Pwn to Own 2021 event happened recently. Mm-hmm. This is one of the biggest, or if not the biggest, computer security competitions out there. This is held twice a year at the CANSEC West Security Conference. And in this competition, people are challenged to try to find vulnerabilities that have obviously not been found yet in some widely used software and mobile devices that people are using. And a lot of things came out of that event this year. What is being reported in the Apple blogs, including the Mac Observer, is that one person found a previously undiscovered Safari exploit. And okay, this sounds like a pretty serious one because this person received a $100,000 award for this.
Whoa.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go you.
Trend Micro Zero Day Initiative announced this on Twitter. So this person named Jack Dates, he is from RET2 Systems. He won a prize for this Safari exploit. And I tried to dig into it a little bit. So it sounds like he used this integer overflow through Safari, and he was able to gain kernel level access on a Mac. Now, as I pointed out, the kernel, so the kernel is it's like the lowest level of Mac OS or Windows OS, like just any operating system. Mm-hmm. And this program has complete control over all the other parts of the system. So if someone malicious is able to get access to the kernel, they can do some pretty serious things.
Yeah, this is your whole computer. And now if I have the knowledge, I can do whatever I want with your machine.
Exactly.
Sleep tight.
And so,
yeah.
What he did is something called an integer overflow. Now, this means...
Oh, that's a classic.
So I tried to describe this using, you know, just very basic knowledge because... Like I've said before, I only have really basic knowledge when it comes to deeper stuff like this.
Yeah.
So an integer overflow just means that you're trying to force something like a computer component of a system. You're trying to force it to store a bigger number than what that its memory space supports.
Yeah.
And this can lead to other things. The most common of which is what is called a buffer overflow.
Yeah.
And I think we have mentioned some exploits about buffer overflows in the past.
Yeah.
So what that means is that it's whatever website I was referencing this, they consider this the number one most dangerous error that a system can produce. And it means that when a program receives too much data, some of that leftover data can corrupt its nearby memory space. Mm-hmm. And that causes the program to do really wonky things. It can either report some kind of an error, or it can cause it to act in certain ways the creator of that program doesn't expect, such as
or intend
bad things.
Yes. And sometimes what happens is again, I don't have a good handle on this, but a lot of times what will happen is, you know, things will collapse in such a way that you get additional access to the system through that collapsed area of that program, you know, like you said, adjacent memory, you know, or things like that. And that's where that stuff comes in. So that's why those are bad, is because then it gives you, even though it's, you know, sort of sketchy and not always reliable, it can give you access to a system, and that's not great.
Yeah, I mean, at their very basic, you know, computer systems are just based on the binary code, just ones and zeros in organized in different ways. And that's kind of what a buffer overflow means. It's just that there's something weird going on with the numbers that you're trying to do things with it that it wasn't designed for. Mm-hmm. And that whatever thing you find can lead to more things potentially.
Yeah. So that's always, and that's part of where overrun stuff happens. And that's why, like, if you know people who are programmers, you'll find that they spend a lot of time on managing memory and things like that. Because if you have things that leak, or you have things that, can be exploited in this particular way, then, it can be really bad for your system. So that's so this just comes back to the thing that we always tell you here on Security Friday. At some point, Andrew, we're going to have to draft, you know, the Ferengi rules of acquisition, but like for Security Friday. And, you know, we're just going to start numbering them, and it'll be, you know, rule number three is, you know, when there's an update for your system, you need to go apply it, you know, because it's keeping things like this from happening to you. So.
That sounds really cool, actually.
All right. Well, yeah.
Security Ferengis.
There you go. The Security Friday.
Ferengi Friday.
Okay. There we go. It's Ferengi Friday now.
Yep.
So, Quark, tell us about the latest release from Apple's legal department that we got yesterday.
So this is another good thing in security. So every year, Apple has published a transparency report sharing to people, like, you know, what kind of requests for data it receives from governments and other kinds of private third parties. Mm-hmm. Well, the government is more like public, but anyway. So... I was alerted to this because I follow Zach Whitaker on Twitter, and he writes for security over at TechCrunch. And so he pointed out a couple of interesting new things that happened with the 2020 transparency report.
Okay.
Because they published that this year, right, in 2021, based on what happened last year.
Last year. Okay.
So, yeah, in 2020. So, a couple of new things. So, first of all, he says Apple has started to respond to national security FISA content requests for iCloud data, which is pretty normal. Like, if you receive a FISA request, I think you have to answer it. Like, you can even like, this isn't just Apple. Like, you can send a FISA request to other companies and the government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, depending, I guess it probably depends on what type of content you're requesting. But mm-hmm. they have to at least answer something, right?
Yeah. And so what that is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court is FISC, and that is the court that allows you to issue these things. So it's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Mm-hmm. I hope it's been updated, because I think it's from the 70s, and it's so I hope they've updated at least, you know, a little bit of it. And I'll tell you what, I will find a good link to an explanation of a FISA FISA request. Sometimes I think they're called FISA warrants. And yeah, I believe that even if the answer is like, you know, basically you're not cleared for that information, I think they still have to come back and tell you something. So yeah, it's interesting that that's a thing that's happening and that they're being upfront about it. So this is another one of those, like you said, good news stories, because yay, transparency. Like, I'm glad Apple's upfront with how much of this stuff they have to deal with.
Right. Or in some FISA requests, the CIA will just send you 100 pages, like completely blacked out.
It's all redacted. Yeah. I've seen those redacted. Come out like, yeah, it's just, yeah. They sent me the thing I asked for, but all I can read on the pages is the numbers of the pages.
But the second change that I thought was interesting in this report from Apple is, so Apple, it sounds like they have officially confirmed, quote, in certain instances, customers' iCloud content, such as stored photos, emails, iOS device backups, contacts, or calendars, can be shared in response to a valid emergency request. Now, as Zach Whitaker points out in his tweet, we kind of assumed that by, you know, kind of reading in between the lines and trying to, like, having different knowledge about these kind of things.
Yeah.
It's definitely good to see this in clear print, as he says, and Apple officially saying this. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I don't think this was last week, but maybe a week or two ago, I was talking about this when I wrote that tip about sending secret messages and Apple Notes. And that's something that I had talked about. The reason that this is good, I guess, or at least the reason that the security people kind of assumed that Apple could give this type of content, is because iCloud content under most conditions is not end-to-end encrypted. Like we said, if you put a password in an Apple Note, it's end-to-end encrypted. But if you share an Apple Note, you are not able to put a password on it.
You can't do it.
Ergo, it is not end-to-end encrypted. And the reason that Apple says, and I think this is a valid reason, is that your encryption keys get stored, at least with an iCloud backup, in the cloud along with your other content. And this means that Apple can try to help you recover your iCloud backup in the case of, you know, maybe you forgot your iCloud password, Apple ID password. However, in the case of something like this transparency report, the other half of it is that because of this, Apple can also potentially share your data with law enforcement if they receive a subpoena. So on the one hand, your iCloud data is safe. On the other hand, it has the potential to not be safe. I'm trying to word that right.
Yeah, like, it's possible, depending on a number of things, right? Like, there are some things that it could be. So, but again, it's good news. Usually, like, I do want to call out when other places do this. Like, Google usually publishes one of these. I'm trying to remember who else does, but I know I've seen, like, transparency reports from other organizations. So it's nice that they post them, and I'm glad that we see it. And it's nice that it doesn't end up being a big deal, so to speak. Like, this is just a matter of course. Like, if the government asks us for information, we're totally going to tell you about it. So.
Yeah.
I like that piece of it is the piece I like. So I'm glad to see it. And now this one is good in a way, but it's an angle into, like, sort of a not great discussion, I guess. And that is phone scamming. And so we only have a little bit of time. So before we even get into this story, what I'm going to tell you is go read Andrew's write-up of this. Because it is interesting. And then if you have time, get some coffee, maybe make a snack, and sit down with the original story. It is lengthy. I'm going to tell you now, like, it's lengthy, but it is absolutely worth every minute of time that you spend reading it. So definitely go check it out. But Andrew, go ahead and give us the highlights.
Yeah, so like you were saying, this is a good story, but also depressing because, you know, people are up to all sorts of different things,
right? Yeah.
And like, as I noted in my cover of this, this is behind an Apple News paywall, but Brian was the one who shared the link to it. And mm-hmm. even though I don't have a News Plus subscription, I was still able to read the whole thing. So I'm assuming that because I shared that link in my article, everyone can do the same thing. So this is an investigative report from AARP. They're reporting on how this man, who is anonymous, but he uses the alias Jim Browning.
Okay.
And it sounds like he was living in Ireland, and it's basically just his story of how he has been battling phone scammers for a number of years. It sounds like from 2014.
Yeah.
So as I covered the story, I said, you know, so during the day, his day job, he's a software engineer at some unknown consulting firm. And at night, he goes into this office where he has this, you know, his computer command center, and he fights this phone fraud.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of it is from India, as mm-hmm. that's what the report reported on.
Yeah, and he's like very much a superhero because he's got like this, first of all, the whole thing is based on his secret identity, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, like he goes and spends the evening like, you know, weaponizing knowledge to go after these folks.
Yeah, because these phone scammers, you know, it's the tech support where they try to trick you into thinking that there's something wrong with your computer, like a virus. And mm-hmm. they say something like, we can help you fix this. It's just going to cost yeah. you, you know, $1,300, for example.
Right? Yeah.
So it sounds like in the beginning, in 2014, he was receiving a lot of these robocalls, mm-hmm. and he decided to answer one day and just play along by granting them access to his computer, but it was in fact a virtual machine, which mm-hmm. is walled off from his actual computer, and he played along with them and was able to hack into their cameras and their computers themselves. And eventually, it's really fascinating, he was able to see what they were doing in real time.
Yeah.
He was like talking to the reporter from AARP about this. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, as any, I think, good person would do, he was like, you know, disgusted by what was happening. Like
yeah.
he's witnessing crimes in real time.
Yeah.
So he began trying to warn the victims' banks, like, hey, I think, you know, this person may be sending cash to a fraud, to a scammer. Here's yeah. what's going on. He tried to warn carriers like FedEx. In one person, she yeah. was sending $10,000 in cash to the scammers via FedEx.
Yeah.
Like they made her, you know, send them a picture of her holding the box to verify, mm-hmm. which is pretty gross. Like
the whole point about it
is that they're mostly prey on the elderly.
Yeah. And I loved his, creative approach to like, I'm going to call the bank and tell the bank that, you know, Andrew's going to come in and try and clean out his account. And you should know that it's because of a scam. And I have evidence that that's exactly what it's for. You know, don't let him, whatever, yeah. You know, calling FedEx and going, hi, you are about to deliver $10,000, you know, illegally to somebody. Thank you. Drive through. You know, trying to call people like, hi, that person that you're about to give all that money to is a scammer. And like, and that's, I think the part of this that is the worst is that it's social engineering, like you said off air, like it's something they're gaining, gaining people's trust and then gaining access to their bank accounts through that trust. And part of that is societal, right? It's rude to hang up on somebody. And yeah. part of it is preying on the lack of knowledge, which is another reason that both you and I are glad to do Security Friday every Friday is getting this information out there, helping people arm themselves, all this kind of stuff. You know, and like one of the things I've been able to convince my family of, they're not always easily convinced, but one thing I've been able to convince them of is no computer company will ever call you about a problem with your computer. Because it's up to you to call them. So Apple's never going to call you and say there's a problem with your computer or your phone. Microsoft is never going to call you and tell you there's an issue with your PC. That is never going to happen. And if it does, the thing that you do is you say, at least in my family, I taught all of them, you tell them, oh no, you know, or, you know, fake something. I have to go. I will call you back. What's your number? And they will either hang up on you or they will give you some fake number. And then you take that number and you go to the Department of Justice and you report them as a scammer. And I have told this story before. I have an aunt who called me up and was apologizing to me. She said, I'm really, really sorry, Kelly. And she said, this person called up with a very thick accent and told me there was a problem with my, he said he was from Apple and that there was a problem with my computer. And I said, well, I know, you know, my family member works there. Like it wasn't my grandma, but it was like, oh, my granddaughter works there. What's your name? Maybe she knows you. And he hung up. Mm-hmm. And the thing that she was apologizing to me for was lying about my working at Apple. And I said, listen, family member, you can tell if you think someone is trying to steal your money and scam you, then you can tell them anything you want about me. And that's fine. You have my permission. And I'm proud of you for your quick thinking. And I'm happy to be a made up Apple employee if that's what it takes so that you don't end up out thousands of dollars.
Yeah, definitely. She's like,
okay, so so I'm going to tell all of you listeners, if you think you're getting scammed, my friend works at Apple. What's your name? Maybe they know you. That will get them off the phone immediately, apparently. So you can try that. Now, if you're listening to this show and you get one of these calls, one approach that I have friends who get these calls regularly, and one thing that they like to do is keep the person on the phone as long as possible, because as long as you're on talking to me and I'm putting you through all these hoops, I know you're not talking to somebody you can actually get money from.
Yeah.
So if you have time and if you're so inclined, you can always do that. So, if you have a good story like that, or if you have a good tactic that you've used against those folks, or, you know, helped encourage your family to use, let us know at observations@macobserver.com. We always want to get feedback about the show. If you write into us with a question or a tip, we will absolutely highlight you on the show. So we can give you some shout outs for that. And that's going to do it for us today. Like I said, go read that article. It's really good. And Andrew, as always, thanks so much for coming by today.
You know, it's good to be here. And the excuse that you can give is, yeah, my friend Andrew Orr, he works for the NSA and he thinks what you're doing is weird.
Okay, I'm writing that down. And I'm going to give that one to my family as well. See. We'll see if any of them use it, because I think that would be fun. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. Have a great weekend, everybody. I will talk to you on Monday. Until then, be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.